Now, back to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. Rick, in this segment, we're going to talk with David Fry, the Director of Communications and the TV voice on USA Network for the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show that's going to be on next week on Monday and Tuesday. Good morning, David.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're doing terrific. Snowbound just like you are, I imagine.
The beauty of winter, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. David, in preparing for our discussion this morning, I was watching some of the previous Best in Shows that you've had, and I noticed a unique observation. I was watching, in particular, Uno and Stump and Josh, and I saw just what huge crowd favorites they were. And it made me begin to wonder, is it the crowd that brought out the best of the dog, or is it the dog that brought out the best in the crowd? And how does that affect the judging?
I think it goes both ways. I think, you know, the great show dogs are going to be able to turn the crowd on, especially when it's a sold-out Madison Square Garden like we've been for the last 5 or 6 years. That's part of it. And of course, when you get into that final lineup, the seven group winners you're going to have at a show like Westminster, and there's no other show like Westminster, but at Westminster, you're going to have seven great dogs. So it's going to come down to something more than being a great specimen. It's going to come down to showmanship or personality or attitude or charisma, whatever you want to call it. And when the dog shows that, that gets the crowd going. The great Josh, I know Carol Bergman is going to join us here soon. The great Josh turned the crowd on by barking at the right moment and having everybody relate to that and say, oh, my God, how cute is that? It's just like my dog at home. And suddenly the arena lit up for Josh. So it works both ways.
Well, there's no doubt they did light up for Josh and for Stump, too. Maybe it was the age of Stump that really made people understand that, wow, the dog doesn't have to be a two-year-old in order to compete at a show like Westminster. They can be an older dog as well.
A victory for seniors everywhere. He was actually became an AARP magazine cover story too a little bit later, so it was great fun.
Well, and it's inspiration to all of us who in real life also aren't in the younger areas as well. David, why is it the big dogs seem to have a tougher time in showing at Westminster, or is that just my imagination?
I think it might be your imagination a little bit, but, you know, the big dogs, there are no secrets with big dogs. They're all there. You got plenty of, got a big view of them to see everything, and they generally aren't going to be able to cover things up with coat like some of the little dogs can. But that said, our judges put their hands on the dogs and feel what's underneath that coat. So there are no secrets by the time you're standing in there in any of the rings here at Westminster on this green carpet.
In noticing the publication, it sounds like there's three new breeds to bring to the green.
Three new breeds this year gives us 173 breeds and varieties for people to see. You're not going to see all these dogs on a walk in the park, but this year we've got the Irish Red and White Setter joining the sporting group. The Pyrenean Shepherd and the Norwegian Boohoon joining the herding group. So we scoured Europe and found an Irish dog, a Pyrenean dog, and a Norwegian dog to come along to the party.
David, in getting the new breeds in this year, can you explain to me how does a dog qualify to show at Westminster? What are the steps that a breed has to take in order to be recognized by AKC and to get into Westminster?
Well, of course, at Westminster, we are a member club of the AKC. So when they determine a breed is ready for competition, eligible for competition, then that's when they become eligible for us. Then to enter our show, they have to be an AKC champion, which means they have to have shown at a number of local shows or other shows and gotten enough points to become a champion. And then they have to go through our entry process. We invite the top five dogs in each breed during the course of the year. We invite the top five to be pre-entered, so that we know we're going to have all the top dogs here, which we always do. This year we have 48 of the top 50 and 88 of the top 100. So it's the only dog show all year where all the great dogs are in the same place at the same time. But after we invite those five dogs to pre-enter, and not all of them do, but if they did, we would have 850 entries. That's roughly a third of our 2,500 dog limit. The rest of them come from the open entry process that occurs on usually the first Friday in December.
It must be an amazing coordinating project. Every year you probably have to sit back and look at, okay, how do we do it better? And you've been sitting there for working with the club for now 20 years, it is, isn't it?
That's it. This will be my 21st year of doing the television.
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
The audience probably doesn't know, but you know, your club started out just after the Civil War, and you're now there, and you've been there for the last 20 years. Can you give us a little bit of insight as to how things have kind of evolved or changed? What was the message when you first took over, and what has been the message? And how important is it to get across a core value to the overall listening public when you have the chance to kind of bring this to the overall masses? There's nothing more than a crown jewel on with respect to this particular show.
Absolutely. Well, in my 20 years, I think 20 years ago when I started doing the show was before we had this huge expansion of media. And at the time, our concentration was, and still is, on presenting the world's greatest dog show and the world's greatest show dogs. But we've expanded that, and it really has always been this. It's just that we started to talk more and more about it as our audience widened. And that is, it's a celebration of the dog in our lives. We talk about these show dogs that you see out there. These aren't dogs that sit on doggy cushions eating doggy bonbons all week between shows. They're family members. They sit on our couches and shed on our dark clothes and steal food off our counters and maybe even drink out of a toilet once in a while. But they are real dogs, and we are real people. You know, most of us have jobs during the week where we'll pack up the van on Friday night and head to the next dog shows. But it's a wonderful family sport, and it's a great activity, a great way for you to be doing something with the dog that you love that's part of your family.
And I think that even though that probably the general audience in hearing the stories from some of the various even spoofs on dog shows, they think there's a bit of highbrow. But I can tell you that from a personal level, when I was a kid, I had that book and from AKC, and I went through and I tried to associate with a particular breed myself. Maybe you can comment a little bit about how it reaches every individual that's out there and how different breeds kind of connect with people.
Well, I think the key is that every breed that's recognized, virtually every single one of them started as somebody picking two different dogs to breed together and probably selecting for traits that eventually those traits got fixed, whether it's the physical traits or the ability to do things, and hence a purebred dog and a pure breed was born. That's what people, I get the question all the time about Labradoodles. Are you ever going to recognize Labradoodles? And after I tell them that the AKC is responsible for recognition of breeds, I say to them that every breed started as a mix of breeds, but eventually you can't just breed a Labrador to a poodle to get a Labradoodle. That's never going to be a purebred Labradoodle because there's too much inconsistency in the type, in the offspring. You got to be breeding a Labradoodle to a Labradoodle and get more Labradoodles that come out the same every time. That's the beauty of purebred dogs, is the predictability that when we breed an Akita to an Akita, we know we're going to get Akitas, and we know they're going to be a certain size. We know they're going to have certain needs and conditioning requirements and coat, and we know how big they're going to be. And I think that's the important thing, that as the dog grows up, there are no surprises, and that way the dogs aren't going to end up in shelters or be unwanted or be shunned in the family and tied up in the garage or in the backyard all the time.